Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Krista Joy from DisneyWays.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
This is Lord Henry Mystic of Mystic Manor, and you're listening to the Disney Parks Podcast.
Oh, Albert, stop that. No, not the music box.
Hello, everyone. Our guest on the line for you today is known for having the voice of a thousand men. In addition to an amazing, expansive career in film and animation, his voice enhances several of our favorite attractions in the Disney parks around the globe. We are so honored that he has taken time out of his very busy schedule to give you and us a behind-the-scenes take on his work that we all know and love so much. Steven Stanton, welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
We are so excited to have you. So I think I shared a little bit with you that the first time I heard your name was at the D23 attraction Rewind in November 2014. But since then, I've come to find out you've done so much work for Disney that I wasn't aware of yet. So can you just kind of take us back and tell us where all this work for Disney began for you?
Well, with the Disney Studios just proper, not talking about Imagineering, one of the very first things I did for them was to voice match Happy from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And that was just for general usage. Anytime they needed to have Happy come on board, you know, for whether it was a DVD or we did Disney's Holiday on Ice, one of those shows. And it grew out of that. That was the beginning of my relationship with them. And then I started filling in, doing the voice of Tigger. I did that, and then there was some DVDs where I came in and was doing like behind the scenes of Pinocchio and some of the where they took storyboards and had animators sort of reread all the lines from the notes that they would take during the story meetings at Disney and recreate the meetings. So I would be there with people like, you know, Rob Paulson and Bill Farmer and guys like that. We would all play the different parts of the animators. And then out of working with Disney Studio, I started to work with the theme park division, which I'm sure all of you guys know here are the Imagineers, Disney Imagineering. And there's been a lot that I've done at Imagineering. Don't even know where to start there. I could say that probably one of my favorite things I did with them was the Mark Twain riverboat captain, who sounds a little bit like this here. Keep your hands and feet on inside and don't sit on the railings. We don't want anybody falling overboard here.
That's great.
Yeah, so I mean, they've called me in for a number of things. The voice that you heard at Destination was Attraction Rewind. It's such a long title. I can't remember.
You had it, yeah. Destination D, yeah.
That was the father from the Carousel of Progress, which I've also done for them at the D23 Expo that we did a couple of years ago, when they had the Carousel of Projects, where they recreated kind of like a fake Carousel of Progress pre-show, you know, with the warnings about, you know, taking flash photography and all that stuff. And it was kind of done to show everybody what was going on in Imagineering, what they were developing around the world, the different attractions. And so I did the narration for that also as father. But this one, the one that you just heard, was really a lot of fun to do because they lifted a lot of the dialogue from the show and then kind of massaged it and made it, you know, particular to the event that you guys were at, which I hope was a lot of fun. I didn't get to go, but it sounded like it was a great all-day affair.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Was. Yeah.
It was a two-day affair.
Right.
And we got to hear your awesome voice pretty much, you know, during the whole time. So it was wonderful.
Oh, that's great. Right. You know, it's a lot of times, you know, there's, you know, just because of like time and distance and schedule, I don't get to go to a lot of the events that I actually work on or see the attractions. For instance, in Hong Kong Disneyland, at Mystic Manor, where I do the voice of Lord Henry Mystic, you know, of Mystic Manor, I've yet to see that except only in the video format. The Imagineer showed me the ride run through at the at the Imagineering Studios, and I've seen it on YouTube and the videos that people have taken, but I've yet to go to Hong Kong Disneyland firsthand and see it myself.
Yeah, we haven't been there either, so you're not the only one.
Okay, well, we'll meet up there. When I go, I'll give you guys, send you an email, and we'll all meet up there.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, when did you find out that you can, you know, do all these voices? You know, did you do them, you know, growing up as a kid, kind of, you know, making fun of your teacher? I know, I think Mark Silverman was saying something like that. He used to, you know, kind of mimic his teacher, and then obviously get in trouble for it. But when did you find out?
You know, I did. I used to watch a lot of cartoons as a kid, so I started just, you know, imitating the voices that I heard without even thinking about it. And then my brother and I used to have a lot of action figures, things like G.I. Joes, and we used to make them talk. So that was all of a sudden where, you know, I started coming up with original voices and not just repeating dialogue that I was hearing on cartoons, but, you know, making my own voices and my own dialogue up. And it kind of, you know, kept growing and snowballing from there. My sister and I used to make tape recordings of like funny interviews and, you know, put clips of songs in there and things like that. And it just kind of snowballed out of there. I never really thought of it as something that, you know, anyone would do as a job. That was the last thing on my mind. I thought it was just something that was fun to fool around with. But obviously at some point it became, kind of took over everything that I was doing in my life and became my main focus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that. I was wondering if it's kind of something, you know, that you're born knowing you want to do, or, I mean, I guess it's something you did. You knew that you would like to do it, but you never dreamed in a million years you'd make a career out of it. And here you are, this amazing career.
Yeah, I mean, I originally, you know, came out to Los Angeles because I wanted to direct films, because that was what I was doing back with my friends back in junior high school. We would get out the old Super 8 film camera and get a group of people together and just make movies. And at a certain point, you know, I really got the bug and started, you know, wanting to write the things. And, you know, when you buy the movie camera and you're reluctant to let anybody else use it, especially when you're a kid that doesn't have a lot of dough on hand, and you're like, no. I'll direct. Someone might break it. And you know, that was my original intent, primarily to come to Los Angeles, was as a filmmaker. And voiceover kind of grew out of that, because I've worked for a lot of different studios in different capacities over the years. And anytime anyone needed a what they call a scratch track, which is like a temporary voiceover, you know, I was always the first person to volunteer to say, oh, you know, I'll lay down some dialogue for you guys, or narration, or whatever it was. And believe it or not, this is a really interesting tidbit. The film school that I went to, the head of the cinema department is another Disney voiceover actor, was at the time, and that's Andre Stoica, who does the voice of Owl for Disney and the Winnie the Pooh. You know,
interesting.
And he was the head of my cinema department. So I was in seventh heaven. I didn't know this when I signed up to go to school, that this guy, the person that was doing something that I really wanted to do at this point, was actually going to be kind of like the dean of the department. So that was great getting to know Andre. And now we actually, you know, occasionally we actually work together, which is even more fun.
Yeah, that's great. Stephen, can you explain to us, I was reading that there's two different things. It's called an audio double and then a voice match. Can you explain to everybody what that is?
Yeah, those are essentially two different terms for the same thing. Voice match, sound alike, audio double. It all is doing similar to what I do for a lot of Disney. Whenever I'm not doing an original voice, I'm voice matching maybe a classic character for an actor who's probably most likely, in Disney's case, has passed away. Out in the world outside of Disney, when I'm working on feature films, a lot of times what happens is that they finish a movie. They're in post-production, and they need some dialogue replaced, or they've written some new dialogue, or there was, you know, a bus drove by and it ruined an actor's line, and you can't hear it on the microphone. The microphone didn't pick it up. But unfortunately, in many cases, the actor has gone on to the next film, the next project. They're on the other side of the world. They're on another set somewhere, and they can't be on an ADR stage recording dialogue. And in those cases, the producers and the director get together, and they look for someone someone like me who can come in and match, voice match or sound, do a, be an audio double for that actor and replace all their lines in the movie. And usually it's done very secretively. We don't, we have to sign a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA, and you usually don't talk about, you know, what it is that you did. And if all goes well, and usually it does, the audience is none the wiser when we're finished.
Yeah. So do you do work where, you know, they want to air an R-rated film on TV and there's a lot of language in it that is not appropriate for television? Will you go in and do actors' voices to, you know, make them say cleaner things and take out all the language that's not permitted on television?
Yes, I have done some of those, and those are actually those are a lot of work sometimes, especially when, you know, some of the, like, you know, if you did a film like Blazing Saddles, you know, it's almost right. impossible to do, and they come in with what they call an approved Bible of swear words that you can say that sort of mimic, you know, the common ones that we all know. And sometimes it gets very funny when you're trying to make up something, you know, to replace a long string of expletives, and it just gets kind of funny because, you know, you're trying say all these clean versions of this. And then the other,
How many times can you say "forget you"? Right?
Like, right. Well, and they try to come up. And sometimes the guy that's the ADR director is literally—I've seen them banging their head in the three-ring binder, trying to come up with something, you know, different. Like, how can we look? What he's saying is actually spray painted on the wall. It's like we can't show that scene. You know, it's like, what are they trying to do to us? And so those are very long days sometimes when you're doing that. Another instance is sometimes they will do that for films that they show on airplanes during flight, because the in-flight movies sometimes contain language that is not appropriate for the general audience. And sometimes they have scenes like, you know, airplanes crashing or stuff like that. They have to completely get rid of stuff that's, you know, you don't want to have that when you're up in the air. You don't want people thinking about things right. like that. So they'll cut scenes like that out or change the dialogue so much that it's like trying to take the onus off the fact that, you know, there's a plane being struck by lightning on screen, you know.
I would imagine doing like a movie like Scarface, I mean, they have to pay that person a ton of money to, you know, redub, you know, Al Pacino. I mean, he uses a word in that movie, I think, more than any other movie right now. So, you know, it'd be crazy.
Well, it's certainly I'm not getting what Al Pacino gets, I can tell you that. So it's much easier and a lot less expensive to bring someone like me in. But it's still a very specific craft. It's a very specific aspect of voiceover and acting. And it's really not very easy to do because you're working with the director many times that was there on the set with the actor. And he's trying to explain to you what it is that they did on set and what it is they're trying to do here in the studio. I've been with some directors where they'll sit you down and actually have you watch a whole reel of the film so you get an idea of what the actor is doing, what their performance is, because somebody like an actor like Liam Neeson, for instance, may be using, I don't know what kind of an accent he's using. I mean, it could be American, it could be Irish, it could be English, you just don't know. So it's not, you know, it's not just kind of a catch-all coming in and doing, you know, an impression. You're really trying to capture the essence of that actor's performance in that particular film.
So that's interesting. So if Liam Neeson's in a movie and he's doing an accent, that's got to be even harder to try and reproduce an actor doing an accent.
It is, and that's why they'll many times give you reference material ahead of time. Most of it's confidential. Sometimes, and like I said, they'll give it to you ahead of time or they'll have you watch some of the film while you're there so you can get into the rhythm of it and get the sound right. Because it's, you know, you never know what somebody is going to do. And it's a challenge. I will say that. It's a lot of fun to do, but it's definitely a challenge. And, you know, for Disney, they have their own set of challenges. When we did Mystic Manor, for instance, Lord Henry Mystic was supposed to do his dialogue 50-50 in English, or, you know, with his British accent, and the rest of it was supposed to be Cantonese as well. And so I had all my dialogue in both Cantonese and in English, and I don't I don't speak Cantonese. I had to kind of like learn it on the spot right there. They had a dialogue coach in there with me. And, you know, I remember his first words when we were being introduced. He was like, very happy to meet me. And he says, so how long have you been speaking? How long have you been speaking Cantonese? And I said, I start in about 10 minutes with you. And I'm sure he was shocked. But, you know, we went through it, kind of did a lot of it phonetically, you know, where I'm just, he would say it the way it needed to be said, and then I would repeat it. But in the end, they just didn't feel it was a good match doing the British accent with a Cantonese, and they ended up, you know, getting rid of most of that. I think Lord Henry speaks a few lines of Cantonese in the attraction, but most of it's just English. But that was a very difficult job, one of the hardest I've ever done.
So interesting. So going back to the attraction voices, can you tell everybody about some of the rides that you're on so we can listen for you?
Okay, so well, in the Mark Twain Riverboat at Disneyland, I'm the captain. And at Disney's California Adventure, I am in the, I always get the names of these rides not exactly right. I play Stinky Pete. I think it's in this Toy Story. Is it Toy Story Mania?
Yes.
I'm not confused. Mm-hmm. Video game. So I play Stinky Pete in there. I think you're shooting at him, and there's all kinds of shooting going on. I think there's a shooting gallery or something in there. At Walt Disney World in Florida, the new attraction, the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train ride, I play Happy. That's me. Along with my other dwarf cohorts like Bob Joles and Bill Farmer. We all had a lot of time. We had a really fun time doing that. It was fun listening to us try to all sing together at Imagineering, because we had never sung as a group before.
Oh my goodness.
We had recorded, you know, it would have been like, you know, if the Beatles had all been recorded separately for most of their career, and then all of a sudden they had to do a concert and you threw them all in the same room. Well, they don't really know each other that well, or how well. So we had recorded, you know, some songs before, you know, for Disney on Ice, and but we had never sung as a group before, and I think nobody there realized that. So it was kind of like, whoa, wait a minute, you guys. It was pretty funny.
And you're the voice of Scuttle, too, on the Little Mermaid attraction, right?
No, not as far as I know.
No? Okay. I thought I saw a video of you doing that one. Maybe that was something else. Cosmic Ray at Disneyland's new Space Mountain. Is that right?
That was for a very specific, I think it was one of the very first things I did for them, but that was a number of years ago. That was for Grad Night at Space Mountain.
Oh, wow.
Like 2005 or 2006, something like that. That's probably, I'm sure that voice is long gone, because it was very specific to the graduating class that was graduating, because I would say the class of 2000 whatever in, as part of the recording, so you can only use that 1 year.
Okay, right.
So that was when they had just redone Space Mountain, and they were explaining to me how they could reprogram the lighting inside to do kind of whatever they wanted. So it wasn't just locked into the ride that you see during the day. They could reprogram it to do a number of things. And I think that's what they had done for Grad Night, was they had reprogrammed it. And
very cool.
Doing. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That's neat. And then can you tell everybody about the Vulture voice at Club 33?
Yeah, so as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, Club 33 went through a really big remodel. And one of the things that they were doing was there were only a couple of those sort of like animals, you know, the stuffed heads and things like that were there from when Walt had it, you know, the way he originally designed it. But they told me they took the Vulture down, and much to their surprise, it was like this thing was completely intact, a complete animatronic creature that had just not been used. It was just sitting in stasis. So there was really nothing wrong with him, apparently. I mean, I'm sure maybe he had to be refeathered or something. Might have been dusty. But his innards were good. So they wanted to do an experiment and think, well, maybe we can put him someplace back in the club where he's not, you know, sort of an unobtrusive kind of space, and have him interact with the customers in very much the same way that Walt wanted those animatronic creatures to interact with people that were dining there. So we went in and we recorded a whole bunch of dialogue. And now I think he sits on top of, like, is it like a china cabinet or a bookcase or something like that in the foyer? Or
yeah, I think he's in the corner above a china cabinet that has the merchandise in it.
Yeah, and so he says all sorts of very cute and pithy and sarcastic things to people that are kind of like waiting around, and he's kind of like, of course, hovering as well. We all know what vultures do. They're waiting for something to die and to eat it. So he's, from what I understand, it all worked out great, and that's where he is, and hopefully he'll be there a long time. I'm happy to say I'm part of Club 33, since I've never been inside.
Well, they should at least invite you for dinner, Stephen.
Well, hopefully that'll happen.
Yeah. So you must have a favorite voice that you like doing, one that it's kind of fun, or, you know, that brings back some memories.
I think especially for Disney, you know, apart from Lord Henry, I really love that character because he's original. It's something that we made up, and it's a new character. So you're always, you know, you're partial to something like that because it's something that you help create and bring to life that's new. As far as some of the older voices, I have to admit the father character from Carousel of Progress has got to be one of my all-time favorites. I used to pester them on other voiceover sessions. I would just do my lines in that voice just to get a laugh, you know, and they would always say, oh, you know, one day we might, you know, do something with that. And then I remember I was doing something, I can't remember what the job was. I was doing something very different for the Imagineers. And when we were done, we were sitting around kind of talking, and somebody said something about the weather or something like that. And I just said, well, the robins are back, and that's a sure sign of spring. And everybody just kind of broke into laughter, and they're like, oh my God, they're like, that's Father from the Carousel of Progress. And that led to the D23 Expo job and the one that you just heard at the Attraction Rewind event. So as a voice actor, you're always looking for, you have to practice. You never know what's going to come up. You can't just work on the voices that you do already. You have to be prepared for anything else. So it's always good to have kind of like a grab bag of all different characters that maybe you're not doing currently, but that you might be asked to do, because that happens on a day-to-day. I just did it today, as a matter of fact. I was asked to do an audition for, I can't say who, but it was, you know, another actor, and, you know, once again, it was like, it's not available, or can you do this person's voice? And so I had to audition for that, lay down some tracks from my home studio and send them in. So yeah, that's be prepared, just like the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's really interesting. Like, we don't think about that side of it, but yeah, I mean, you've got to do the marketing and show people your stuff. That's what it's all about. So can you talk about some of your other exciting things that you have going on? You have some really awesome things on the horizon, the Unbroken film and the audiobook of Treasure Island. Can you talk about all that for us?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, one of the things that Disney fans might really be excited about is that we're doing the 7D television series, which I'm involved in. I play Sleepy. It's the Seven Dwarfs prior to meeting Snow White when they're living in Jollywood. Bill Farmer's involved with that. Billy West, Maurice LaMarche, Kevin Michael Richardson. You know, we've got Whoopi Goldberg and Jay Leno doing voices on it. Kelly Osbourne. It's a great cast. It's a huge cast, as a matter of fact, and we just got picked up for season two. Even though season one, I don't even think we're halfway through season one yet. But season one just got picked up, and so we're moving ahead on that. So that's a lot of fun because it's great to do something new and fresh with those characters, and something that is just, you know, it's just plain funny. It's being, you know, it's funny for the sake of funny.
That's really neat. Is that on the Disney XD?
Yes, it's on
Disney XD. And I think it may be migrating over to a couple of the other channels to run simultaneously, like Disney Junior, but I think that's still maybe down the road. Apart from that, I did do some work on Unbroken, the film that Angelina Jolie directed about Louis Zamperini, and that's coming out on Christmas Day. I think it's an incredible film. I hope everybody has a chance to see it. It's very inspiring, you know, very inspirational, and I had a lot of fun working on that. I also also had the great fortune to work on the documentary Life Itself about the life of film critic Roger Ebert. And in that film, I was asked to do something very different. I was asked to supply Roger Ebert with his voice and read from his autobiography, Life Itself, because he wasn't able to do it. Obviously, he wasn't able to speak the last few years of his life because of his medical problems. And then during the making of this film, he passed away as well. So the director, Steve James, who did Hoop Dreams, another very well-known documentary, he and Chaz Ebert, Roger's wife, approached me about voicing Roger. And it's been doing great. The film has just got on the short list for nomination for Best Documentary for the Oscars. So we'll see what happens in the coming months. And it's won the National Board of Review for Best Documentary. It's been getting accolades all over the place. And it's going to be coming, even though it's in the theaters now, but it's getting ready to come out to air on CNN and also coming out to Blu-ray very soon here in the next month in January. So lots of good things for that. And then just for fun, because I'm a voice actor and I can't stop talking sometimes, we started to record the book Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson, the classic, as an audiobook, and I'm putting it up on YouTube chapter by chapter, and hoping people will come and listen and let us know if they like it, and we'll keep doing more. It's been a lot of fun to do because there's so many different characters, and we're about three chapters in right now and putting them up every Sunday, early Sunday evening at 4 o'clock, I think, Pacific time. So, you know, some for the parents to let the kids listen to as they're getting to put them to bed, something like that.
Yeah. So you're not just reading the book, you're doing characters.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's the fun, because there's a lot of audiobooks for Treasure Island out there.
Sure.
But, you know, I just thought, well, I just, you know, there's so many great pirate characters in there. You know, you've got to, you know, for Long John Silver, and, you know, it's truly one of the classics of all time. It inspired so much, everything from, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, that owes so much to that original story, as do so many other pirate tales.
Yeah. Congratulations on everything, by the way. Really awesome.
Well, thanks. You know, I'm really looking forward. Next year is a busy year. We've got another D23 Expo coming up, and I've done two so far now, I think it is, where we do like the panels, like the voices of the parks. And I have to tell you, I have made so many friends at the D23 Expo. The Disney fans are just so enthusiastic. They're so appreciative. I just absolutely am floored by their enthusiasm for all things Disney and the love that they show anybody that is involved with the Disney projects. It's so great to actually hear from an audience how much, you know, that you like what we're doing, because working in voiceover is very isolated. You're not in front of you're not on stage. You usually don't have an audience. So it's one of the only ways you know whether or not anything is going over, whether it's a success, is whether or not people are reacting to it. And thank goodness we've got things like D23 and podcasts like this where I get to talk to people one-on-one. And I just can't thank everybody out there enough for going on the attractions and watching the shows and just being Disney fans. I love being part of the Disney family.
Yeah, if you really think about it, I mean, the Imagineers can create these moving parts, but you guys that do the voices are really the things that bring it to life. And for me, you're like the unsung heroes. You know, Imagineering always gets the, you know, the applause, but you guys are really the thing that gives it the life with your voices. So, you know, we have to really, you know, give you guys a lot of that applause and attention, because you're also part of that show.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, Imagineering, working with them is really quite a collaborative effort, because one really is relying on the other's expertise to help bring these attractions to fruition. You know, one of the things as a voice actor, when you go into work with the Imagineers, is you have to set aside some of these preconceived notions about how things are done, because the Imagineers, and this is something I learned with them, they have very specific things they need from you for the attraction to work. for instance, when I've done some recording for them that was going to be played over loudspeakers at the park, and they have to coach you on how to pace it and your volume, because they said this is going to be heard over, you know, this wide of an area, and there's this kind of a lag or an echo, so you have to space it this way. And so, I mean, they have all this technical stuff in their head that I would never have thought of. You know, I would just start talking, and they'll tell you, you know, you have to slow it down, you have to put an extra pause here, you have to space the words out this way, or when we're doing an attraction, this has to lead into this. And I mean, they have all this stuff in their heads, and you're just relying on them, because there's nothing to see when you're in the recording booth.
Yeah.
The ride hasn't been built yet. They may show you some pre-production drawings or something like that, but that's it. You're really relying on them communicating their vision to you, and I have to hand it to them. They're very good at it. I always enjoy working with them.
That's good to hear. That's a lot of good news.
Yeah, there's so much involved that we don't think about behind the scenes. It's really interesting. So yeah, so we're just super excited to have you on this show today. We really appreciate your time. I know you've got a lot to do and you probably need to get going, but we want to thank you for coming on. And then can you just let everybody know how they can follow you on the web and that good stuff?
Sure. But before that, I do have a question I want to ask you guys. So am I going to be seeing you folks at D23 Expo next summer? to Anaheim?
I'm a definite maybe. I've been going and I'm still contemplating this year, but I'll probably wind up going. I just can't not go. It's, you know, part of my Disney DNA, I guess.
Yeah.
So if I'm there, I will certainly look you up, Stephen, and I will find you.
Oh, you have to let me know. We can do a live on the scene podcast right there.
Yeah, that would be great.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be great. We would love that.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to see at D23.
It is.
One of my favorite things, which I haven't always been able to get in just because the line is so long, is the they go into the archives and they bring out all the stuff, you know, whether it's the costumes from Zorro or Mary Poppins, or, you know, there's just so much stuff in the archives. And those buildings are right near where I work, and I'm always trying to get them to take me in there and give me a tour, but there's never enough time. Mickey's of Glendale is about the best I can do. I can go shop or the Imagineer shop.
You have to go in the archives. I've been in that building, and it is very awesome. There's a ton of things in there that are, you know, very cool. So you have to try and make the time next time and beg somebody to get you in there.
Well, maybe you can put in a good word for me. You seem to have the in over there. Come on, Tony, do a guy a favor. Huh?
I'll put in a good word for you. Trust me.
Thank you. Thank you. Those guys are tough over there, man. You know,
they can be.
Secretive.
They are.
Are you going to be coming to Orlando anytime soon?
I don't know. I was just there. Well, I was just there. I was there. When was we there, Dutch? What, 2000? We were there for a Star Wars Celebration, the last one they did with that. And this year they're doing Star Wars Celebration also at Anaheim. And that was a year ago, maybe? It was 2 years ago. Oh, yeah, it was 2 years ago.
35 events.
Yeah. We're trying to count. We did 35 events in like 18 months. We did a huge amount of traveling. And we're just kind of worn out. So we're kind of saving our energy for spring and summer of next year. And I would love to get out to Florida again, because that's where I grew up. Walt Disney World is the first Disney park that I was ever introduced to. So that's the one that I actually grew up with. Even though I'm in California now, I mean, and I'm definitely a convert. I love Disneyland just because it's the original and it's smaller. It doesn't take so long to walk around. You don't get tired as easily. But Walt Disney World, yeah, I know. Walt Disney World is just, you know, there's just something, you know, Polynesian Resort. Oh, I love that place.
It's undergoing a complete rehab from top to bottom.
So I hear. I hope they're bringing it back to its original splendor is all I can think of.
Probably better than that.
That's great, because they have one heck of a luau they put on there, boy. If you like to eat.
They brought it back to the retro name, so it's back to the Polynesian Village now, like it used to be.
I used to think I was imagining that it was called that. I thought, I guess it must have always been called the Polynesian Resort, but now that I've heard this, I'm glad it wasn't just...
No, yeah, you had it right. all the time. So yeah, I think they're kind of trying to keep that old, you know, feeling, but still have everything new and refreshed. I'm excited. I think it's going to be great. And you'll definitely have to come back and let us know when you're here, because we'd love to take you around the parks or
Absolutely. Like that. Yeah, would love to. I haven't been to, 2 years ago was the last time we went to Walt Disney World, because we had some friends that were visiting from Tasmania and Australia, and they had never been to a Disney theme park. They're full grown adults, but you know, so we bought them all tickets and took them on a whirlwind. I mean, in the middle of a hurricane whirlwind, literally tour of Disney World. You know, there's no discount for heavy rainstorms, but we went anyway, and we just did, you know, we did the highlights. We did, you know, the park was empty, so we could do anything. And actually, the rain stopped after we were there for about, you know, 20 minutes, a half hour. So, you know, we took them through the, you know, showed them the castle and Main Street, and then did, I think we did Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, and Space Mountain. And one of the guys, this is terrible, he had never been on a roller coaster before in his life, and nobody told him what Space Mountain was. And his friends put him up front. So he was sitting down on that bench, you know, where they have for people to recuperate outside. And when it's done, he's sitting there holding his head in his hands. I'm like, what's wrong with him? He's like, oh, he's never been on a roller coaster before. It's like, oh my gosh, this is not the first one you want to do in your life. The one in the dark, you know, that's going like 50 miles an hour, you know.
That is too funny.
So he probably didn't believe you when you were taking him on other things. He was saying, no, this is not a roller coaster.
Well, actually, that was the last thing we did. That was the last thing we did.
Good for him.
We had to get him to the airport. So, but they definitely had a trip to remember, definitely. But, yeah, we have lots of pictures of it and everything, all the embarrassing moments. And that's all on my Facebook page, which is where people can find me. It's easy enough. You look up Steven Stanton on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, and I'm pretty easy to find. There's usually a picture of me with a baseball cap on in my profile, so it's easy to spot me.
Yeah, and we'll definitely link to everything in the show notes. And so stay on the line with us, but we're going to go ahead and sign off on the recording. We just want to thank everybody for tuning in, and thank you, Stephen, for your time, and we'll see you in the parks.
All right, great talking to you guys. Bye-bye.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. One reach upon a star, your dream.